Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mike Armstrong podcast show. This evening, we're joined by Liz Fleming, who is joining us from Virginia, outside Washington, in the US. And Liz is an operations manager for a museum. So how are you doing this evening, Liz? You okay?
So far, so good. It's been a crazy week as we are preparing for a major event as far as Virginia is concerned, which is Garden Week in Virginia. So we have a lot of moving parts to get together as we are the site on next Tuesday.
Okay, fair enough. So lots to be done. I know because we met on Clubhouse and we've been speaking for quite a long time now. So I know you've been open pretty much or quite consistently throughout this pandemic. Has there been any particular pandemic issues or problems you've had to deal with, or have things generally been pretty much as normal?
The biggest issue that we've had to deal with is restructuring of our tours. Our tours used to be guided with a docent, and so you had someone following the groups of the general public around. So we had to retool the schedule and the tour so that it was self-guided tours, which meant really kind of evaluating the valuables and the artifacts in each room, because we'd love to think the general public is fantastic, but things do get damaged. And so the high value objects had to be secured away since the docent was not going to be accompanying the public coming through. Do have to schedule, and then we have the cleaning protocols that have to take place after each group comes through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sort of like more sort of housekeeping type stuff and just changes of some systems. But other than that, you know, not too big a change. Have you noticed much of a change in the footfall and the attendance?
Of course, last year we did. At the beginning of this year, we opened an exhibit that we'd had in the works for 2 years. And we have noticed that we are having more of an interest now that we have an actual exhibition that is installed and ready to go. We still have to have people schedule and do the cleanings between, but we are seeing an upturn in the people calling to schedule the events.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because obviously I guess now people are able to get out and about a little bit more than they want to get, you know, out and doing stuff again, because they maybe have had a few months or a while without having to get out and about and do stuff. So there's probably parents and wanting to get their kids out and take them out for the day and get that energy used up rather than them running around the house and, you know, and all that like they've been doing during the sort of closed time. But I know America's, some of the states haven't had so much lockdowns and some have and all that sort of thing. But and in the UK, the museums and all that were closed, but you pretty much stayed open, you know, pretty much all of the time. Did you close down at the first lockdown right at the beginning?
We did. We closed and changed everybody's work schedule. We're a small staff to begin with, but we changed everyone's work schedule, so only one or two people were on site at any given time. The biggest area that we actually were hit hardest was the event rentals. People do like to rent our grounds for weddings and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And our state has been really strange with opening that back up. We recently had to participate in a petition to the governor because he opened up ballparks and he opened up concerts for thousands of people, but limited weddings to 50 people. So we had a lot of people calling to book a concert on the grounds because, you know, we had a lot of romantic concerts.
Yeah, we'll just get married at the beginning of the concert and then we can party.
But he recently did change under, I think, pressure from the wedding industry and the hospitality industry, which is much larger in Virginia than the sports teams are, for example. So that has been nice. And we're starting that season ramps up next weekend for us and goes through June before it gets too hot to be outside.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Oh, to only live in a part of the world where it's too hot to get married, you know, in the UK, you know, they pray just to have a bit of sunshine and not a rainy wedding day. And, you know, it's usually everyone tries to get married in July or August, which are the chances of having a dry day. But the opposite decision, really. They're trying to, you know, get outside when yours are going inside. They're trying to get outside. But tell us a little bit about your background, how you ended up working in the museum, you know, how you ended up becoming operations manager, all that sort of stuff. Tell us a little bit about your story and your background.
Well, my background actually was in real estate. I was in real estate for a number of years in the commercial properties and management realm, as far as that goes. I was not in the selling of residential homes. I was more in the commercial spaces. Yeah. And that transitioned into, I found that I liked the legal aspects of property management much better than I did the actual property management side. But that gave me a wide range of skill sets and knowledge as far as mechanical systems went. So I went briefly into the legal side of things and worked for a law firm and got my paralegal certificate and went more into managing the law firm than real estate. Then I went off and had kids. And then I was looking for a job that was going to allow me the freedom to take care of my children. And this organization, being a small historic house museum, afforded me that luxury. I have been able to set my schedule based on my children's schedule. Of course, they are now grown and old. They are 27 and 26 this year. No, 28 and 26 this year. So that, you know, the freedom to still come and go as I please and set my schedule based on what the needs of the site are has been very, very rewarding for me. So it just, that real estate piece, that legal piece all came together so that, you know, my job is from doing IT work. And as I told you in the clubhouse today, on Friday night, I helped shovel 4 tons of gravel. Or pig decorative gravel for the event on Tuesday. So it's. I think that's another reason I've enjoyed the job, because it's so varied in what I may do day to day. It's not your standard desk job at all. So.
No, and you don't have your standard hobbies either, do you? So I suppose you like a bit of variety and doing stuff a little bit different and stuff. So tell everyone a little bit about your hobbies, and then tell everyone a little bit about your lawnmower story.
Which lawnmower story?
The one that you ended up taking home with you.
The goats. So my big hobby that I came across a number of years ago was beekeeping, and not so much to get honey, but just to maintain a population of bees. And so I've been a beekeeper now for 7 years. And this year, the new hobby part of that has been changing out the way that I maintain the hives. I have in the past used your standard Langstroth boxes, which are all stacked on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting any younger, as evidenced by the ages of my children. So those get very heavy. They can be 60 to 80 pounds to lift them off with material and bees inside. So I've moved to woodworking and built my own lay-in hive this week. So, and I get my bees on Saturday, because we had a property nearby sprayed and took out my bees last year, along with my neighbor's bees last year. So we're having to start fresh and send out a reminder to our neighbors that there are bees in the area, and to please let us know if they're going to spray chemicals on the farms that are around us. And then my other hobby, and how I ended up out in the farm, which you can see the sun coming in right now, is in 2018, I had a goat dropped on my desk, little baby goat. And the organization, the museum that I work for, is very tolerant of my crazy ideas. And one of those crazy ideas had been natural organic grounds maintenance. And so we had brought a herd of goats in to clear our back hill. And this little guy got abandoned by his mom. And so I was asked to foster him and took care of him on my desk and then took him home and bonded with a baby goat. And we had to sell our house and buy a new house and then buy the goat, a new goat to have as a friend. And so that is my other hobby, is my pet goats. And they are spoiled rotten. Everybody asks,
what do a goat like for treats, you know, for being spoiled?
They like bananas. It's a very symbiotic relationship because they love banana peels. So everything that I used to compost now can go as a snack. If I pop some popcorn and there are kernels left, they like the kernels. If I strip the skins off of a cucumber, they like the skins of a cucumber. They like the peels of the banana. So they get a lot of banana. They love licorice.
They're like the little green bin. They're like the little green bin I have in the corner of my kitchen for putting all the organic stuff in. Yeah, they're like that. But you know, instead of having to put the bin out every once a week, they take the bin out themselves and they put the rubbish in the corner. It goes through the front end and out the back end. It gets turned into new compost to help the roses grow.
And it does, because goat poop is less, you know, now that we'll just talk about poop now. Goat poop is less harsh than chicken poop. It won't burn your plants. The chickens, because they have, they're omnivores and they will eat, of course, little animals and mice and each other in some cases, their poop has a harsher burn nitrogen level, I believe. And the goats don't, because they are all, you know, plant material. Ooh, and so grass. That actually fertilizes your plants much better than chicken poop.
Yeah, oh, there we are then. So that comes in handy. So, so all that peels, like you say, it gets composted much quicker. good. So what's the plans then for you? Are you ever going to go back to real estate? Are you happy with where you are now and in the museum and that, or you got any other sort of plans for yourself and your future or what?
Well, one of the things that we just came across that my husband is, you know, has supported, he's very tolerant, is we are going into more woodworking. I'll have to put a picture up of, we have had to take some major trees down at the museum. And again, the organization that I work for kind of embraces my crazy ideas. Mm-hmm. And so instead of having the tree cut up and chipped, I had the tree milled on site. And now we brought the wood out to my house because I have a barn to cure it in. And so we're going to sell the live edge, and it's a 50-50 split for whatever I make on selling the live edge. So that's our next stage is woodworking. We, like I said, we built the lay-ins hive, which is a completely new design. And in part of my research, I found out that there is a movement, at least in Europe, for creating bee beds where people can come and you design the hive so that the people can come sit on top and have a meditative time in the hive, but safe from the bees, to feel the vibrations, to experience the rhythm, to experience the smells and sounds and vibrations of the hive. And so that's going to be our next build between woodworking, the live edge. We're going to build a bee bed and have it and see if people want to come out and experience that. So
it's a bit like a bee yoga, really.
You know what? Bee yoga. I like it.
Bee yoga. That sounds like a good merchandise range. Bee yoga or bee more yoga.
I took Ricky's advice today. Yeah. And because of the goat and honey, horns and honey, I now own hornsandhoney.com and .org in case I want to go nonprofit.
Yeah. Sounds good. It's why not? You know, they cost next to nothing to buy those domains, and you might as well park them. And if you get inspired and you decide to do something, then, you know, why not, isn't it? You know, you have to find a way, you know, like you get like these cute pet videos with like one strange cute creature with another one, you know, and they bond, you know, sometimes as they're both pets, they end up, you know, bonding together and stuff. You have to find a way of getting your goat and your bee to bond.
They will freeze when they hear a bee. They know that that's what that means. So they're just, they freeze off when they hear the bees. But yes, no, it's, those are my new hobbies, is seeing if I can monetize an experience and get people to be more comfortable, so to speak, around the bees, because they really are not aggressive by nature.
No.
Clearly there's some Africanized strains out there, but by nature honeybees are very, very docile and less threatened. And that's, you know, but I get the on my own, and you're confronted with 60,000 bees right there. You're like,
yeah, I'm not bothered by them. I think they're the sort of animals that you say, the creatures, if you don't bother them, they don't bother you, sort of thing. But if you start bothering them and, you know, whipping your arms around and being a bit of a loon, like some people do, you know, it's, I think because people have had a bad experience with a bee, they like overreact, and then they're more likely to have another bad experience with them then, because they're causing it, like, you know. Whereas I always just, like, you know, I'll flick one away if he's starting to come too close, or just ignore him when he's flying around, and now they'll generally go off and fly somewhere else, that, you know. So that's what I always think, just ignore them and then go away. Same as most annoying adults, ignore them and they'll go away generally.
Most cases, yes. Sometimes yeah, they hang around, but most times, yes, they do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So do you still take your goat to work with you every day? Does he come out and do the garden while you're working in the office?
I do take them to work on occasion. I do have to keep them in a fenced area. The site is not 100% secure with gates during the day. And so when I do take them, I have to bring my own fencing to put them in a contained area. The only area we put them in now is yearly, we cut down the liriope or the liriope, depending on whose pronunciation you like. Is that bothering you, the light coming
in? No, it's fine.
And they cut that down in February, March. And then, you know, we'll take them out, and it's more promotion for the museum. When City First, his name is City, when City First came to us, he became front page news. For whatever reason, I had posted a picture on my Instagram, and somebody who worked at the paper saw it and wanted to come out and take pictures and get a story about this goat on the grounds at Wilton. And so, you know, we do still have people who follow him and like to come out and see him at the museum. And so he pretty much comes out as promotion.
Yeah.
When the herd comes back this summer, and they're due to come in July and, you know, work the big hill, that takes about 70 goats to clear in 4 or 5 days. When we have them back out, he will be on property with me for the running of the goats, as we call it. You know, and it becomes a very big event for people to come out and see all these goats come running down the chute and come onto the hill and start grazing. He's there to meet and greet, but he doesn't do any work.
No, so they're
he knows he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to work for food anymore. So
no. He's good. Yeah, fair enough. And so the goats themselves have become an attraction then, as part of, you know, part of the exhibits, if you like, you know. People they have their own crowd and they draw in, and do people like to watch them at work mowing the lawn?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. And it gives me the opportunity and the platform to talk about organic lawn care. that you don't need to spend the resources and waste the resources via water that people like to do on their lawns. It's crazy the amount of money people spend trying to maintain a lawn that belongs over on your side of the pond. But it's a colonial revival attempt to mimic what the estates looked like in England for the people that came over and settled America. Yeah. And that's, people want these lush green lawns that are not meant to be somewhere that has the heat and the humidity and lack of rain. So yeah. It's amazing how much water we waste and don't need to. There are neighboring.
I've seen Vegas. I've been to Vegas. You know, I've seen the water that they throw around in Vegas, you know, keeping everything looking green there and stuff, you know.
And it's all a throwback to the people that settled America who wanted to emulate the English aristocracy, yeah, as opposed to embracing what was here and cultivating what was here that will survive naturally in its environment.
Yeah.
So I will say it gives us an opportunity to have those discussions with people. And I'm not going to change everybody's mind. I'm not. People are still going to want to buy into the now because it's always on TV. You know, the green lawn is the epitome of something,
yeah,
but it doesn't need to be that.
Of luxury or something, like, you know, it's a bit strange, isn't it? Why having a green lawn is like, but it seems to be all big mansions and stuff always have a lush green lawn and the water's, you know, if it's like places like Dubai or places where it's hot and dry, they got the water sprinklers on constantly, keeping it green and lush. So I suppose it is a status symbol, the green grass. You know, shows you got wealth because you can afford to pay the water bill or the water rates. So.
And it is, but what a horrible resource to use as a status symbol, you know?
Yeah.
It's my personal soapbox. I could turn it around and I could show you that out here, it's whatever grows, grows. I'm not going to cultivate a lawn. I'm not going to do it at my house and I'm not going to do it where I work. I mean, there are seeds that will grow and be a shade of green. They're never going to be the dark, lush greens that people are aiming for, but it still looks nice. And it's okay to have clover in your yard because actually that's good for bees too.
Yeah.
So
it's a natural, they just switched to doing that, the natural meadow type stuff in the planted areas around the cities and stuff rather than the plants and stuff, you know, the more natural, what do they call it? I can't think of all the daisies and the stuff. What do they call it? They started doing that in a lot of the roundabouts and the planted areas of the UK now. I think they call it, was it a natural meadow or something? Is it a natural meadow or not something?
I would think it is. Meadow grasses will take over, and they only get but so tall anyway. It's
and they're better for the bees and for the nature and all that, you know.
Exactly, and the no chemicals, the chemicals that are required to maintain those really, especially here, those lush green lawns. That's part of why we're killing off our honeybees and our pollinators. It's just not good for them.
Everyone's like putting fertilizers and chemicals and everything on everything, like, you know, on the plants and on the grass and everything. Whereas you just let the natural whatever grows. It's much more organic, I suppose. It's natural. Organic is natural. It's just what would be if you just stop interfering. Stop interfering and let what happen. Let nature take care of it.
Yeah. I know. Mother Nature is going to take care of itself just fine, with or without us.
Yeah.
And probably better without us interfering.
Yeah, so. Definitely. So is there anything else you do or the museum's doing over later this year or anything that you want to mention?
Well, we hope to get back to having concerts. We have a robust lecture series that is available online. It's wiltonhousemuseum.org, not to be confused with the Wilton House that's in the UK. And I have a funny story about that. I did get this tour guide calling to set up this wonderful tour, and I'm passing that information along and getting it to our education department. And then all of a sudden the email comes across and they mention that they were going to be going to London in, I think, 3 days after the tour. Was there anything else around the area that they wanted that we could think that would be great for them? And that's when I realized they thought they had the UK site, the Wilton over in UK,
okay.
The old also, Earl of Pembroke.
Are they sister companies or something? Are they owned by the same family or something?
No, it no. Just was the Randolph family that built the Wilton here.
Yeah.
So admired the Earl of Pembroke estate over in the UK that they took that name for their estate here.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's funny because there's a business in the UK called MA Consultancy. I think it's actually abbreviated for McDonald's Associates Consultancy or something like that. And they're a bigger firm than me and they do a lot of recruitment. And because I'm good at SEO, I'm higher up on the search engines. And so I get calls all the time for jobs because they type in anything, so come to me. And this is a massive firm, but I'm above them. So like people ring me up all the time and they're like, oh, can you tell me so-and-so about this job? Or I'm going to be coming in for this job and I might be a bit late or whatever the call may be. And I'm like, I think you got the wrong MA consultancy, like, you know. At the moment, I'm not doing any recruitment. If ever I get to a point where I'm doing recruitment, then it'll get confusing then, like, you know, but unless I do a recruitment that is the same sort of job roles that they are, and then I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's the one. They can do all the advertising, and I can do all the recruitment. So, yes.
I'm going to have to sit down with you on the SEO then.
Yeah,
get us up further on the search engines.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of people I'm lucky that my name's quite common. It's quite popular. So I've had to work hard at being like the top of LinkedIn and the top of Google and all that sort of thing. And when I say lucky, because I've had to learn those skills. Yeah. And some people, their name is that uncommon that, you know, doesn't matter if they're well ranked or not. They'll just get found because they've got a very uncommon name. Which they would think they're lucky because I'm at the top of the search engines. But actually, if they're in marketing like me, they haven't had to learn those skills. So they've de-skilled, if you like. You know, this is what I say, like somebody was saying earlier on in my room, they were lucky because they didn't get affected by the pandemic. And I said, it could be lucky. I said, but you might be unlucky because it may be that it was Australia. I said, it may be that you just haven't had it yet, you know what I mean? And so you may end up having, when everyone else is back to normal, you're then going through it again, but on your own, like, you know what I mean? Which could actually end up being unlucky. I said, but she was a hairdresser. So she haven't had to do too much because her business has been running right the way through. And I said, yeah. And so she said, well, she was lucky. And I said, yeah, but some businesses have had to pivot to online and now they're selling globally instead of just dealing with the local market. So where's you saying you were lucky, you didn't have to close. It may mean that you're way behind loads of other people now because they got forced into doing something that actually I think a lot of people are going to see the long-term benefits of doing, which if you haven't been forced to do it, you haven't done it, which means you're going to stay a small local business when all the other sort of businesses of your size and in your industry are now all global, selling, you know, online and products, and you know they've had to diversify. And so it's good sometimes to be under, you know, pressure and to have to work hard and to have to do stuff because it makes you tougher, it makes you stronger, it makes you more adaptable, and it gives you other benefits that sometimes you wouldn't have had otherwise.
And we did find that at the museum. We found that we were able to reach a wider audience with our lectures being online and in a Zoom format. So much so that when we go back to being in person, we plan to continue having that as an option and a format, because a lot of people like to come on site. They like to have the lecture space there and be able to talk and interact more personally with the speakers. And some people just lack perhaps the mobility to get to the site and would prefer to watch from their own home. And so I think from a hybrid perspective, we've expanded our reach by absolutely, we know we have.
Yeah, well,
so
that's,
I think that's.
Yeah, when you bring him back, the curator, the show person, the guide, whatever, you want to put a camera on them somewhere, or a camera and a mic and that, and let them curate or guide the online community at the same time.
Do the virtual tours.
Yeah, so they're doing a real world and virtual tour combined, and the people who are disabled or in other countries or whatever, they're having the same experience. You book them in just like you would, are you online, or you book in, or do you want a 12 o'clock tour or the 2 o'clock tour or the 4 o'clock tour? They just become a virtual passenger.
I will have to upgrade the Wi-Fi in the house.
Yeah.
Which has its problems because it is 2 feet of brick interior walls on the lower downstairs floor and 18 inches of brick for all the interior walls on the upstairs. Yeah. And then because we move the house, there's a layer of concrete between each floor. So Wi-Fi, kind of sketchy, but that could be worked out.
I got a better strategy for you. You stick a GoPro on the chap and get him to do it once, video it, and then every time someone books on a 12 or a 2 or a 4, just play the video. So it's like as if they're going on the tour, but it just happens to be the tour yesterday or the tour last year or whatever. That's another way of doing it, isn't it?
I like that idea better. I think that would be more reliable than trying to shoot the signal through the building structure that we have.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. You just record it once, virtual tour, stick it on the website. We'll book in 12, 2, 4, 6. They book in the time, they come on, they hit the button, they think they're doing a live Zoom or whatever. The guy says, oh, hello, welcome to your 12 o'clock tour or your 2 o'clock tour or your 4 o'clock tour. You could have that one line dubbed in, or you could have welcome to your tour, and think about how you make it evergreen, and not time specific, and then you take them for a round for a tour and everything. They think it's live, but they just hit the button and it was a video. And you could have you could set up a chat bot, and then they could ask the guide questions, and it could be going to a live chat thing, and then they give them response back, make it a real live interactive tour.
I am liking these ideas, and I am definitely bringing them up in our next staff meeting as a way forward post-pandemic and expanding the reach as well. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, definitely. And you could you could do the same thing with the goats. So you could put that online, and it doesn't have to be seasonal then. You could put it on any month, because you could just say, yeah, we got the goats again this month, or catch the last time they were in. They're not back until June, but it's only February now. But you can catch last June's experience. You could put a GoPro on your goat as the tour guide, and you could have a goat's eye view of the munching of the grass.
I might have to try to do that. City will let me put things on his horns. Board, not as much, but City will let me put any kind of hat or attachments to his horns. So that could be a very real possibility.
Well, I love tech, and I love tech, and I love innovation and streaming and all that sort of stuff. It's just being creative at the end of the day. And, you've got a platform, you've got a unique venue, and you've got all stuff going on. You've got a crowd that are obviously likes to come and watch it. So, you've got the crowd, you've got the venue, you just got to come up with the tech and the ideas. So if ever you need any out-of-the-box thinking, I'm up for that. I'm always I'm always very creative. So, you know, I've seen a lot of tech I have in my life. So once you've seen a lot of tech, it's just pulling bits off one thing and into another to come up with a new idea, like, you know?
Very, very, very true.
Yeah, brilliant. So I look forward to seeing City, the star of his own streaming show, a goat's eye view of Virginia.
Yeah. They put it on when he's traveling in the car too.
Yeah, exactly. And well, actually, I tell you where they would be popular, I think. Is he house trained?
No, he's not house trained.
Okay, no, because I was going to say, if he was house trained and he was walking around the house or whatever, that's when they'd be popular, like, you know, because, you know, that's like a fish out of water type scenario, isn't it? You know, it's a bit like, Crocodile Dundee when he left Australia to go to the city of New York. It's that sort of fish out of water experience that makes everyone intrigued because it's different, like, you know, it's unique.
And I think that's why, because when he was little, he wouldn't go on the grass. He was so used to following me around everywhere. And so he was always on a sidewalk. He was always on a piece of furniture. I did have him diapered and contained when he was little. And so that, I think, is why the newspaper was so interested, because he didn't like the grass.
No.
And it took him a while once we moved out here for him to really enjoy being in the grass.
Yeah.
But you know, he rides in the car like a champ. I mean, he's just like, you know.
Yeah, he's just used to it. Like, yeah, just because he grew up with it, like, you know. So that's the thing. Whatever animal it is, really, whatever they start off with doing as a youngster, then that's what comes into the muscle memory and the habits and whatever. And yeah, I suppose he got used to his creature comforts, and the grass wasn't as comfortable as the carpet.
Exactly. That was really fascinating when we got Borg, and because I'm a Star Trek nerd, Borg is also city in Icelandic, so I have two cities.
Yeah.
Borg would look at City like he was insane when he would curl up with me and get on my lap. And, you know, he's a little too big to climb up in my lap anymore. And it took about 4 months before Borg finally realized that people were good. People were kind of nice, and they will scratch you and give you really love, you know, rubs and belly rubs. And it, what triggered it was I had some friends' goats that City was used to come stay with us. And so suddenly Borg was watching three goats want to come up and get loved on. And so he kind of came up that day and was like, you know, what's this all about? And then that was it. Once he got his pets and scratches, he's just like, wow. Yeah.
This is good. This is good. I just come up with the name of a book for you as well, actually. If ever you want to write a book about your goat story, because like I say, you've already got people who are interested, and I think it's a good story, you know, especially you having to relocate because of the goat as well, you know, that all adds to it. So you could actually write a book called The Tale of Two Cities.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be a good book, wouldn't it? You know,
wait a minute.
Yeah, and then you could tell the story of the you know, the Borg and the city and all that. And also, I suppose, did you move from one city to another?
Moved from Henrico County to Goochland County. So, yes.
Technically, like, you know, you could say, oh, you know, it's a tale of two cities for two reasons, you know. But
I could. That would be close.
Be close, yeah. So anyway, it's been fascinating, but we come to an end now. I think if there's anything else you've got to say or want to cover, then fire. If not, it's been a great having you on the podcast, and thanks for coming. And I look forward to seeing you next time in Clubhouse.
Okay. I've got to go handle a lecture for the museum. So again, anybody who ends up watching this podcast, then please visit wiltonhousemuseum.org and check out our programming and join us for a lecture sometime.
Brilliant. Okay, then. Well, you have a good rest of the day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.